Well, and tonight we have Mike Vera with us, author of Ancient Aliens on the Moon, and we'll get deep into his theories now when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Mike Vera with us, author, Ancient Aliens on the Moon. What kind of structures do they have? Are they like domes, Michael?
Well, there are a couple of domes that I do talk about in the book. In the Mare Crisium area, and we talked about that just a little bit earlier, but there are, you know, there's these scaffolding structures, which, for want of a better term, we call domes. That's the much bigger meteor shield above everything. And then down below that, covering some craters, you actually have these very smooth sorts of, almost like the watch crystal, a crystal on a watch, a very expensive watch. So they're really interesting different types of structures as you look at all this stuff, this glass stuff on the moon. Now, in particular, this one was off of a
Mike, you're shaking your phone.
Okay, sorry. Okay. There was in particular one very specific image that was part of a sequence that was being taken on Apollo 15 as they were flying past Mare Crisium. It's really interesting. They didn't very often fly directly over Mare Crisium, and it's an interesting area of the moon because it's sort of shaped like a giant hexagon, which is kind of an unusual shape to get from a natural impact basin. And there's these things underneath various parts of the moon called masscons, which are these very heavy concentrations of mass that generate a lot of gravity. But at any rate, they were flying along on Apollo 15 and taking a series of photographs. And it's interesting because you can kind of see in the foreground the crater Picard, mm-hmm. and he's taking one picture after another after another. And then they pass Picard, and they're now looking sort of to the northwest. And he takes a few more pictures, and then all of a sudden, the camera is switched back to the right, and they take another picture of Picard. It's almost as if he was sort of, you know, looking out the window, and then for some reason turned back to his right and snap another picture. And when you look at that picture on the very far distant north shore of Mare Crisium, what you see is you see this very, very bright specular reflection. You see this incredible, brilliant bead of light. Now, that, again, is a telltale sign that you're reflecting off something that's very, very
tall,
bright, or crystalline. You know, yeah, right. Definitely glass, right?
And going up.
And, well, not necessarily going up, but it was definitely something that was a very, very specific pinpoint of light. Now, again, my friend in South Dakota, Steve Troy, did some sectional enhancements of this image, and I put them on my computer and scanned them. This was years and years ago. And you can actually see over these two craters, Cleomedes F and Cleomedes FA, you can see these two edge-on glass domes, and you can even see one through the other. So they are transparent as you look out across, you know, maybe 100 miles away from the spacecraft. And it's just amazing stuff. And the more you look inside of those glass domes, you can also see some blocks and things that look very geometric. They look like some kind of structure. And it's just really, it's really bizarre. It's the kind of thing where you go to yourself, wow, this, am I really seeing what I'm seeing here? But there's no question in my mind that the astronaut was snapping pictures, saw out of the corner of his eye this bright flash of light, and then turned the camera back to take a quick picture of it as the spacecraft was moving over the lunar surface.
What do you think these structures outside of the shields, what do you think these structures were used for?
Well, they're probably habitats. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to cover up a crater and build inside of it and have some sort of habitat underneath there because, again, you can pressurize that. You can create an Earth-like environment. You can, if you need that, you know, I don't know, if you're an alien, maybe you can survive in a vacuum, but
was it a colony?
Yeah, probably, very much so. But it's really bizarre because, again, this stuff, you can catch it from certain angles, and it looks very different than it does edge on. And if you look straight down on many parts of the moon, you don't really get any detail. You need light and shadow to sort of give you the crucial visual cues as to what you're looking at. Now, Richard has argued for a long time that there's no intact glass domes of that type on the lunar surface, but I think we may have found one or two of them still intact. And then the question is, you know, if we could get there and land there, what would we find inside? I think that's a really fascinating question.
It sure is. Your interest in the moon, how did that happen, Mike?
Well, you know, I've always been interested in space as long as I can remember, probably from the time that I was just a little boy. I used to watch the moon land, you know, moon shots and the Gemini missions and all that stuff, even though I was 4, 5, 6 years old. So it's like a lifelong fascination with space. And I remember really distinctly watching Neil Armstrong's first moonwalk and really feeling a little bit bothered by the fact that the picture was so terrible.
It was horrible.
Yeah, I kept saying to myself, you know, Dad, my dad was an engineer at Boeing. He'd worked on various different projects, including a little bit on the lunar rover. And I was talking to him, you know, which didn't come till later, but I was talking to him and I said, Dad, you know, why, we've got a color TV. Why don't they have color TV on the moon?
And we're getting this noisy black and white picture.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And what we found out later was that they had a very good color camera, but they were not allowed to take that to the lunar surface with them. They were required, they were ordered to leave it aboard the command module with Michael Collins. So they did have a lunar, a color video camera that could have taken really, really good pictures. And I think in retrospect and looking back on it now, you know, those guys inside NASA knew very well that there was a lot of artificial stuff on the moon, and they weren't really sure what you would be able to see or not be able to see. And so they basically gave them the worst possible camera. There were definitely protests at that time from people inside NASA. Why are we only taking a black and white camera? Why aren't we taking a good camera? Why aren't we taking, you know, better color photographic film and that kind of thing? There was a lot of protests. And then furthermore, on like Apollo 12, this is, again, a kind of an interesting situation. Now, Apollo 12, as we talked about earlier, it was Alan Bean's mission, where the idea was that they were going to land amidst these structures. So they kind of had their experience from Apollo 11. They kind of knew they couldn't see very much, especially with the way they actually downgraded the quality of the video. It was even downgraded from what was actually taken from the camera itself. By the time it got transmitted to our TVs at home, it was considerably worse than it looked when they first took the images. But on Apollo 12, they were right in the middle of this stuff. And had they really had a good high-quality camera there, you possibly would have been able to see some of this glass stuff reflected in the background. But it, in a very, very bizarre accident, which nobody's really properly explained, Alan Bean did exactly the thing he was not supposed to do, which he was trained not to do, which is that he took the single video camera that was on the lunar module, and he pointed it directly at the sun, and he burned it out. So there never really was more than just a couple of moments of video of the Apollo 12 astronauts.
How big were these structures, Michael?
Well, I think we're talking in some places 20 miles, at least 20 miles high. And there's a picture, there's an Apollo 15 picture, which Richard found for Dark Mission, and I show it again in Ancient Aliens on the Moon. And it was just after the Apollo 15 trans-Earth injection, as they were flying away from the moon, looking back at it. They took a picture of the moon, and the frame number escapes me. And there is this bright greenish-blue glow, very soft, gauzy, hazy glow all around the surface of the moon, including, you know, on the edge, creating this air glow layer. And from that distance, at that range, with the equipment they had, these structures would have to be many, many miles high. And, you know, there's even some really interesting Russian images. They're kind of crude, but they're from the Zond missions that I put in the book, and there's brand new versions of them online these days that show, in one case, this vertical tower. It looks like the Washington Monument sticking straight up out of the surface, and it's got to be 20 or 25 miles tall. There's just no way around it. It's gigantic.
It's amazing stuff. We're going to look at some of your pictures in just a moment here. But tell me about Apollo 17. You think it was a salvage mission?
Yeah, Apollo 17 is one that by that time, I think they had been to the moon. They discovered a lot of stuff. But Apollo 17 was a very, very different mission from all the others. It was the first one and the only one that really wasn't in the equatorial region. It was way up. And you're going to love this. It was at about 19.5 degrees north latitude, which, again, Mr. Hoagland doesn't think is an accident, and I don't think so either. And there was this, they landed very near something called the South Massif. And Massif just simply means, it's a French word that means mountain, the South Mountain. And the South Massif has a very distinctive hexagonal shape to it. It looks like it was once a hexagon. Now, the back end of it appears to have been blown out, or, you know, some sort of volcanic eruption, and or was blown out in some sort of other type of accident. And as you look in great detail at this South Massif, what you see is you see this very odd sort of geometric patterning on the inside of it, as if the whole thing was made up of a series of rooms and cells, and again, artificial geometric structure. It also has an opening near the front, or the north face of it, which is sort of a V-shaped depression. They call it a crater. NASA calls it a crater named Nansen. But if you look at it, it's a V-shaped depression. There's a kind of a shelf over the top of it, and it looks like an entrance. It looks like you could go down into this thing and go inside this gigantic hexagonal structure and look around at what's inside. And, you know, we felt like very strongly that that was definitely one of the targets for the Apollo 17 mission. And it turns out, as you go through their explorations, they were surrounded in Apollo 17. They were surrounded by what are called arcologies, or architectural ecological systems, mountains that had been formed into what appear to be condos all around the Apollo 17 landing site, to the east, to the west, to the south, to the north. As you go through pictures and you look at the photographs that have been taken and you zoom up on the mountains in the background, you see these layers, these very square layers of what look like, again, condos, rooms, structures.
That's buildings. Strange.
Yeah, built right into the sides of the mountains. And then on the second day, the second EVA that they went out on, they took the lunar rover and they made a couple of small quick stops to drop some explosive charges. And then they went straight for this entrance. They went straight for Nansen. And they parked the rover up above the opening so that you could not actually look directly into the opening. And then they spent about 20, 25, 30 minutes off camera, and the camera just sat there and sort of wandered around left and right and up and down, and you never saw anything that the astronauts were doing. Schmidt and Cernan were completely off screen. And again, the idea that occurs to me is, what the heck were they doing? And it's interesting because Cernan later says something along the lines of, well, we didn't really look around any more than you've seen. And what does that mean? Does that imply that they tried to get into this entrance, but they couldn't? Does it mean that, you know, we haven't seen anything, so you did try to get in? You know, because we didn't see them. They just were off camera. We don't know what they were doing. We heard them talking, but we didn't see them at all. And then they drive back down to another position where they would have had a perfect view to look up inside this entrance, this Nansen structure. And they even say in some of the Apollo surface journals that they were going to drive around in a circle and take a bunch of pictures. And they did. And there's all these comments of, Lordy, would you look at that? And my God, what a mysterious place. And, you know, we might have to hide some of the pictures, I think, is something along the lines of what he says. That's not entirely accurate, but basically he talks about they're going to be freaked out when they see these pictures at home, and you can't find any of those pictures anywhere. They're not in any of the catalogs. If there are any pictures directly looking into this Nansen structure, I haven't been able to find them yet.
Do you think any astronauts have admitted this? I mean, we know Edgar Mitchell, Mike. He has never talked about this. Apollo 14.
You know, the interesting thing about Ed Mitchell, and I don't know him. You know, Richard knows him. You've talked.
Yet he believes we've been visited by extraterrestrials.
Well, the thing is, he's willing to admit to or cop to the stuff that you can never prove, which is that, oh, I've heard that NASA knows all about aliens and UFOs and lights in the sky and what they are. But the truth is, you can never put your finger on that. The one thing that we could put our finger on, which is, hey, Ed, did you guys go to the moon and find technology and bring some of it back? He won't talk about that, or when he does, he categorically denies it. So I just find it bizarre that he encourages people to believe in the thing that can never be proven, but he totally poo-poos the thing that could be proven. And Apollo 14 is a little different than 17. I'm not sure they were right in the thick of things like they were with Apollo 17, but I find it hard to believe that there wasn't anything except rocks that these missions brought back.
What do you think the moon was being used for, Mike? And what time period might this have been?
No, the time period is the hardest thing to put your finger on, because some of this stuff looks like it could be millions of years old, because it's so beaten down and battered, and there's a lot of meteor activity, but that's a long time ago. Other stuff looks more recent. Other stuff looks like it was of a fairly recent vintage.
And being used now?
That not? I don't know about. Okay. You know, you hear stories. I mean, I've got some hearsay stories. I know somebody who swears to God that as a kid, you know, in the swimming pool, in the hot tub, his dad worked for a defense contractor, that some of the astronauts and people whose names we've mentioned on this program tonight talked about how they were just, you know, we're just spamming a can, and hell, they've got all kinds of flying saucer technology. They've been to the moon and back and Mars over and over again, and they're just sticking us up there for a big public show. And they expressed a lot of unhappiness about that. So, you know, I don't know. I can't put my finger on that. All I can tell you is that there is all kinds of artificial stuff left over all over the moon. I mean, it's almost everywhere you look.
Let's talk a little bit about Data's Head. I was at an event where Richard showed a picture of this thing. You had an integral part of that, obviously, Mike. Tell me about that. I mean, what is this thing?
Well, look, I'm going to...
And there's a picture of it, I think, in what you supplied us?
Yeah, there is. There should be a picture there. I give you guys links. There's also... It's fairly famous by now.
It looks like a broken-off robot's head.
That's what it is. That's, I think, what it is. I think it's a Cylon, you know? And, I mean, again, I'm going out on a limb in speculation here, but, you know, again, I think that stuff that's in our media, like Battlestar Galactica, is real. It's some kind of racial memory. I think that we probably built these machines. The machines got out of hand. There was some sort of conflict. And, you know, that was what was part of what we're finding, is we're finding the remnants of whatever this conflict was.
Well, this one obviously got blown up.
It did. And the thing is, it's a thing that looks like the head of a robot. It definitely appears, it's definitely not organic, because if it was organic, right, it would have eroded by now.
And there's nobody around it, right?
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that it has a painted red stripe across the upper.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. What the heck is that?
It's a painted red stripe. I mean, it's funny. There's some people out there, and, you know, Richard and I have our critics, and I guess all of us in this business do, but, you know, some people have tried to claim that, oh, you can't, you know, you have to paint that on. You can't actually get it. And I'm sorry. I downloaded the raw images from or the scanned images from NASA's website, and just using the color tools just in Windows, you can just amplify the color, and this bright red stripe comes out right on the face of this thing, and there's nothing else like that anywhere in the picture. But there's all sorts of mechanical looking debris. I mean, I have experience as a mechanical engineer in aerospace, and I see stuff all around this head that are not rocks. There's these weird pieces of machinery that appear to be all busted up, as if a big meteor obviously created the crater, and all these pieces of stuff got broken and shattered and kind of tossed up into the air and then settled back down to the floor of the crater. That's what it looks like. And all around it, there's stuff with connecting points, and I can see tubes and exhaust vents and just all kinds of stuff that clearly are not any sort of natural.
I mean, it looks like CP3O, doesn't he?
Yeah, C3PO. Yeah, that's what he looks like. And you know, that's kind of weird, but, you know, I guess that whenever we create something, you know, man has a tendency to make things in his own image, and why wouldn't you? So, again, that to me is kind of implies the question, or begs the question, you know, is this us? Are we seeing something that some other version of humanity built a long time ago?
It is. It is remarkable. I mean, like the face on Mars in Cydonia, this too has a structure look to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, again, I can't. It's definitely not a rock. It has a metallic sheen.
Whatever it is, it was on the moon when the picture was taken, right?
It was. Now, whether they brought it back or not is a good question. We, you know, we talked about that a little bit in Dark Mission. I don't talk about that so much in Ancient Aliens. But the question is, could they have brought it back? Well, it's the size of a human head. I mean, it literally would have fit inside one of the space helmets. It would have easily fit in one of the rock bags. And, you know, Shorty Crater does not look that steep. It looks like if they really wanted to go down and get this thing, that they could have, or they could have brought back something like it, because there's other pictures from Apollo 17 where just a picture of the lunar rover, and then you see in the background, you see this thing that looks like a big, gigantic mechanical pump.
It's a great picture. We're going to talk more about the controversy on the moon, Mike, with you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Mike Barra here as we talk about ancient aliens on the moon. Fascinating subject tonight. I'm getting lots of emails from people who love what you're saying, Michael. We'll be back with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let's get back to data set for just a moment, Mike, and we'll get into some of these other areas as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is truly bizarre. I wonder what the folks at NASA might be saying when they saw that picture the first time. What do you think? I mean, obviously, regardless of what it might be, it looks like a robot's head. Well, so were they laughing about it? What was happening?
You know, the question is, did they see it? I mean, my experience with NASA is that if they see something that is on a picture or they know it's there, they will do their dangest to erase it before anybody else notices it. So I'm not sure they ever saw it. I mean, you know, there were thousands and thousands of photographs taken. And, you know, that's a really good question, George. What would they have said about it? I think probably some of them, by that point, it would have been par for the course. It would have been another major artifact find. Ooh, oh, so what? Because I think by that time, you know, we were already, you know, it was the very last landing mission, and we were really getting ready to come home and really not do any space exploration and really kill the space program after that. So
could it be a skull?
I don't think it could be a skull for a couple of reasons. Number one, the lunar environment's very harsh. The radiation would have degraded anything organic in probably just really a few years, maybe, you know, just a few years, much less a few hundred or a few thousand or a few million years. So I think it has to be mechanical. And then you've got the fact that there's this painted red stripe on it, which again, using simply the photo enhancement tools built into Windows, I can duplicate Richard's work on that. So I don't see how a skull is going to have a bright red, very sharp painted stripe on it. You know, that's the weirdest part to me.
Let's get into the controversy now about the Daedalus Ziggurat.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one. You remember this came up. It came up, what, about 2 months ago, I guess.
Yeah. You were right in the middle of it.
Well, I was, because I was, you know, looking around, actually looking at doing a search on Moon Pyramid on Google, and I came across this forum which was discussing a lot of stuff about some of Roger Lear's lunar data and so forth, and somebody had posted this thing, and I remembered it from the 1990s. I've seen this thing before, and I remember it very specifically. And I think at one time I actually had a version of that on one of my computers, but that was, 1994, 95, 96, very early days of the internet. And, you know, how many computers have I gone through since then? I don't even know. And I'd lost it. So when I found it, I was like, wow, this is really interesting and really cool that this thing is surfacing again. And I wonder where it came from. Now, some people have said that it was some of my, you know, harsher critics who cyberstalk me and follow me around like maniacs have said that it was put out by somebody named KK Samurai, who was the guy who put a bunch of stuff out in the late 90s, and they claim he's a hoaxer. But first of all, I don't ever remember him ever hoaxing anything that I can recall, specifically saying that I can say, oh yeah, he faked it. Number two, I saw it before he ever put it out, if he ever did put it out, and I don't really remember him ever putting it out. And the other thing is that he always signed everything that he did. Every image he ever put out, mm-hmm. he always put his stamp on it,
right.
KK Samurai, and this does not have that. So I looked at that, and the first thing I noticed about it that I thought was really interesting is it had this weird pattern on it. Now,
well, paint us a picture for those who don't have computers with them.
Okay, well, so this thing is, it's a very sharp close-up of an object that has this sort of V-shaped pointed front ramps on it, and then it has a very square sort of internal structure, and on the left side of it, in a shadowed area, you can see a very clearly defined left wall, which comes up at an angle. It has sort of a buttress on top of it, and then in the middle is a square structure, which looks like a temple. There is a ramp or some sort of entrance tube leading into this square structure, and on top of the structure is a dome. So you look at it, and it looks exactly like a Mesopotamian pyramidal structures that were known as ziggurats, and they had very specific purposes. They had a central area that was called, you know, a temple where the worship was done.
They're very old, whatever they are.
They're very old, and they're very specifically designed, you know, to be difficult to approach. And I'm looking at this thing, and it looks a lot like the ziggurat at Ur. I mean, it's not nearly as complex, but it clearly has some similarities to that. And the first thing I did was, okay, I don't know for sure whether this is real, although I have my suspicions, so I got to send this to Richard. So I sent it to Richard, and he went, wow, that's really interesting. And we talked about it a little bit, and he did some enhancement work on it, and he put it up. And, of course, one of the things he noticed was that Daedalus is really on the opposite side of the moon from the Earth. In other words, if you were standing kind of in the middle of the Earth and looking straight up at the moon, mm-hmm. and you could look right through the moon, you'd see, first of all, a triangular-shaped crater on the face of the moon that faces us. And about 180 degrees around from that would be this crater Daedalus and this really bizarre ziggurat kind of structure. So it was a very fascinating thing. It appeared to have all the things you would look for in something that was artificial. So Richard came on the show one night, talked about it, put it out, and then the firestorm hit.
Yeah, sure is. Why is it so controversial?
Well, there's people that were claiming, of course, it was fake. Now, the interesting thing about this is that, you know, what it clearly shows me, these guys that are critics, these debunkers that attack Richard and I and everybody else in this field, they...
You got mad.
Well, I got really mad, but they always put stuff out that they basically implied that either Richard or I had faked it. Now, they've denied this, but they basically put the premise out there that anybody would know this is a fake from this reason and that reason and the other reason, or they must have faked it themselves. It's either they're idiots or they faked it themselves. So that really gets under my skin, because here's the laughable part. You know, there's so many artificial structures and machines and buildings and things all over the moon and all kinds of photographs. I don't even have time. I don't have, you know, neither one of us has time to go over everything that's there. There's so many things that have slipped through the cracks that are obviously artificial that it's ridiculous that we even have to fake it. But what this tells me is that they're not going to be able to fall back on their old, you know, pareidolia argument. They claim that there's this human tendency to see patterns where there are none, and that we're just seeing things. And they try to apply that to the face on Mars. But the truth is, George, there's no such thing as pareidolia. It does not exist. It never has been. The word was invented by a debunker writing for Skeptical Inquirer magazine back in the 1990s. And it's like a fake academic term that they try to use to make their implication that people just see things where there's nothing to see. About life, make it sound like it's got some sort of scientific validity, which it doesn't. But the thing is, what it really told me, as soon as they started attacking Richard and attacking me, because it had my name in the file thing, so they knew that the file name, they knew that it was probably from me.
Right.
But the way they attacked it told me a couple things right away. Number one, they're really worried about this, because they realize that if this thing is authenticated, then basically the jig is up. It's the Holy Grail. So that's why they had to tear it down so dramatically, and really go after us with a series of what I thought were really, really weak, very, very phony attacks on the integrity of the image.
Let me ask you about the far side of the moon. As you know, Ingo Swann, the father of remote viewing, in his book Penetration, wrote about artificial structures on the far side of the moon as well. And, you know, even though this may have been somewhat of a novel, his book, he was a great remote viewer.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think he actually saw these via remote viewing. Your thoughts?
Yeah, he did. Because the cool thing about this particular photo is that it actually came with a frame number. Now, that almost never happens when you get an image like this with a photographic frame number. A lot of the best, most amazing pictures of structures on the moon don't have a NASA frame number with them. This one did. And I went and pulled it, and among other things, one of the things I found was that the ziggurat itself was pretty much erased, that they had basically drawn in fake shadows, that they had used a spray paint tool to spray paint in some shadows, but they missed all sorts of other things that are on this particular image. I think the frame number is AS1130, 3855-64, if people would like to go look that up. And all over that image, there are like vehicles, there are buildings, there is up on a hillside, you can see, it looks like a flying saucer. I mean, it looks like the Jupiter 2 from Lost in Space in a hangar that's carved out of a hillside. There is this massive drill-shaped thing that is runs along for miles and miles and miles and is attached to the hillside, and you can see all of these different wires and tubes and things that are attaching this drill head to the side of the mountain. There is what looks like, a sort of a beach house, like a Malibu beach house, where there's multiple layers, there's support struts underneath it, and there's just all kinds of things all over this image that are blatantly artificial. So I would guess I'd have to agree with Mr. Swan, because I'm looking at some of these pictures, and the stuff on the far side seems to be the best preserved for whatever reason.
Mike, what do you think the moon was used for? Was it a stopping off point? What was it?
Yeah, it would have to be a stopping off point. And, you know, look, again, I'm a believer, as we've talked about, I'm a believer in the intervention theory of human evolution. I believe that our bodies, and this is just our bodies, which have nothing to do with our souls and our hearts, were probably cobbled together from our DNA, or from Neanderthal DNA and the Anunnaki DNA that Sitchin talks about. At least that's my best guess at this point. And so there had to be way stations for whoever was coming from, whether it was Nibiru or someplace outside of the solar system, to get to the Earth. There probably were way stations on Mars, which is probably a lot of the structures we see there. And there would logically be a way station on the moon. And then these bases would have been for what? Genetic experimentation, the creation of life, mining of crucial minerals. You know, I don't know. I know, again, in that image I just mentioned, there's this. It looks like a vehicle. It looks. Do you ever see the original movie Planet of the Apes?
With Charlton Heston.
Yeah, and there's the spaceship that they arrive in, and it's a sort of wedge shaped thing, and it's got these two blacked out areas where the windows are. Thing is sitting on top. There's a thing in this picture sitting on top of a depression that looks exactly like that spaceship. And somebody said, well, you know, how come it has wings or it's like a lifting body if it's on the moon? Well, if that vehicle was used to enter the Earth's atmosphere and go back and forth, then it would logically have that kind of a winged appearance. So it appears to be used, that the moon appears to have been used for some sort of major project or projects over the centuries and the eons. And, you know, who knows what that was.
That's exciting stuff. It really is. And you've done a great job. I understand, by the way, that somebody sending you some emails under a fake account. Tell me what's going on here and why.
Well, this guy, my chief critic in all this has been a guy named Dr. Stuart Robbins, who is some sort of, he's a rock doctor. He's a geologist out in Colorado.
He's real.
He's a real person.
He emails you?
Well, I have some critics. This one guy who is especially stalkerish. He's a very, very strange person. I'm not even going to mention his name, but this is a guy, like, he'll go in and he'll post multiple negative reviews of my books on Amazon under different assumed names.
Of course,
he sometimes pretends to be his mother.
His own mother. A sicko.
Yeah, he's whacked. But he feeds information to a lot of the bad astronomy types, so Dr. Phil Plates, and apparently Dr. Stuart Robbins is a wannabe. He wants to be in with the Bill Nyes, the science guys, and those kind of people and be part of this group. And he's the one who really went after the ziggurat image very, very intensely. So.
And that's his opinion.
He's entitled to it. And I have his opinion. And if people want to go to my blog, it's mikeberra.blogspot.com and read my 6-piece complete deconstruction of everything he said. They're entitled to go read that. After these attacks had started happening, I got this weird email, and it was from nobody@noreply.com. and it was, you know, asking me these weird questions like, you know, can you tell me how to calculate it and how you calculate an ellipse? And again, I know immediately this is somebody who's read this other cyber stalking person's blog, because this is one of the ridiculous things he puts out that's somehow based on he somehow twists what I've said on some radio interview or in one of my books into somehow figuring out that I don't know what an ellipse is, which, by the way, it's a closed arc with both a long and a short axis. That's what it is. Doesn't necessarily even have to be closed, actually, but it works better that way. So anyway, he starts asking me these questions, and he signs it like Dan or something like that. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to bite, Dan, you know, whoever you really are. You come in here with a fake ID. I don't even know who you are. You're asking me these stupid questions that come from this cyber stalker guy. So I don't really believe in you. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, suit yourself, blah, blah, blah. And sorry that you feel that way. And we kind of go back and forth. And then the last email, he signs it, and the sign is Stuart, S-T-U-A-R-T. And then he sends me very quickly another email saying, oh, yeah, that's not really my real name. My real name is really Dan, but I sometimes use a fake name, Stuart, when I'm doing this.
Like he made a mistake?
Yeah, like he made a mistake. And what it was, here's what it really was, is I'm 100% convinced it was this Dr. Stuart Robbins from...
Your opinion.
From Colorado. It's my opinion.
Your opinion.
But it's spelled, you know, Stuart can be spelled with an E-W or a U-A-R-T.
Yeah.
And it's spelled his way. And here's what I think happened is that he was trying to trap me into saying something he could criticize me for or attack me over. He was using, obviously, a fake email address and a fake name, but he probably had a built-in real signature, which was Stuart. And he just probably clicked send without realizing that he had forgotten to change Stuart to Dan or whatever the fake name was. So that was pretty...
Why do people care to even try to destroy what you do?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I take it as a compliment, because what that must mean is that I'm all of a sudden becoming important. It must mean that I'm
important. You're stepping on somebody's toes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, you know, I'm getting to be on Coast to Coast once in a while. I'm moving up the ladder. So I'm now worth apparently knocking off. And so in a way, I really find it flattering, and I kind of wear the scorn as a badge of honor.
Knocking off in a figure.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, but the truth is, George, look, there's now you have the internet. Anybody can be published. Anybody can put their own stuff out there. And what there is there's just a lot of people out there. I talked about this with another very famous UFO person a couple of weeks ago. And what happens is when they hear Richard on the radio or they hear you on the radio, they feel like, you know, why is he the important one? I should be the important one. I'm smarter than him, and mm-hmm. I'm better than him. And I, you know, and they get jealous and they get angry and they want to take you down because they believe that in taking you down that they somehow elevate themselves. That's one thing. And the other thing
they're haters.
Yeah. But the other thing is really important is that what you're doing with this show by letting people on it, like all the guests you have on, and I'd like to thank you for having me on. What you're doing is you are making people very uncomfortable. These guys, you know, the Dr. Stuart Robbins of the world, they are very comfortable with their place in the scheme of things.
You know, we're going to have to ask him on now because you've mentioned him several times. So, in fairness, right?
Yeah, I won't listen. But, you know, the thing is...
Well, you should. He may mention you a lot.
Well, okay. But, you know, these guys, you're making them very uncomfortable because you're making them confront a reality that they do not want to confront, which is that the hierarchy and the structure that they have invested their self-esteem and their life's work in is not only based on a lie, it's also quite probably corrupt. And that's really, really hard for them to take. And so when that happens, they get scared. And they get angry, and then they treat you like a heretic. And I'm not, you know, again, I'm not comparing myself to Galileo here, but, you know, but we're all, in a sense, we're all Galileo. It's the Galileo, you know, it's a Galileo complex.
We're going to burn you at the stake.
They would, believe me, George, they would love to burn you at the stake, too. They'd love to do it to all of us.
Me, too?
I think so.
Mike, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. We're already at the top of the hour, and we will take phone calls with you next. As we talk with Mike Barra here on Coast to Coast AM, his work, Ancient Aliens on the Moon. I'm going to be with him at a panel coming up the first week of October. Get full information on that by going to our website at coasttocoastam.com. Click my calendar schedule, which you'll find under hosts at the top. We'll be back.